From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the program. We have a busy night ahead of us. My next guest has been a national leader of the conservative movement since the publication of her best-selling 1964 book, A Choice, Not an Echo. She has been the leader of the pro-family movement since 1972 when she started her national volunteer organization called Eagle Form. She has a monthly newsletter, the Phyllis Schlafly Report. It's in its 47th year. The syndicated column appears in 100 newspapers. She has radio commentaries on 600 stations, and she does a talk show on education called Eagle Form Live. It's heard weekly on 90 stations. Big kick tonight to have Phyllis Schlafly on the show. Welcome, ma'am, and hopefully I didn't butcher your name pronunciation too bad.
No, you said it right, and I'm thrilled to be on your show.
Nice to have you. Now, we're going to get into the main topic, which is diversity, which I think is so important with the election around the corner and everyday life, both in Canada and the United States. But with the problems that we've had recently, and it's all over the media regarding sanctuary cities, illegal aliens committing crimes, serious crimes, murder, in this case, San Francisco for the main example. And now all of a sudden we have all these politicians, Dianne Feinstein, one of them putting her big foot in her mouth and trying to look like she actually cares right now. But it's because of politicians like Dianne Feinstein and Hillary Clinton and all of those that were having these problems, or am I wrong?
Yes, that's right. And, you know, we can really thank Donald Trump for putting it on the front page. He made his big statement, and then the very next day, a guy who had been seven times deported out of our country came back and just shot dead some woman walking on the beach in San Francisco.
Now, we haven't heard all of the evidence yet or the reports on the case. It sounds like he was using a federal agent's gun, but nevertheless, the point of sanctuary cities is one that has raised eyebrows for many years, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and others. What about that, your thoughts? You've been involved in politics for a long, long time. When did the first sanctuary city idea come up?
Well, I don't know, but I think they were entranced by the word diversity, and they sold themselves, the liberals did, that diversity was good for our country. It was a good advantage to have all kinds of different people here. And actually, I think anybody who comes into this country ought to believe in and honor the oath they have to take to become a citizen and respect the United States as a superior and a very exceptional form of government that has given us more freedom and more prosperity than any other country in the world. And that's why everybody wants to come here. And I don't think we should apologize for it or think that we will be improved by taking in people who don't believe in limited government and balanced budgets and families taking care of themselves rather than the government. And I think we should admit people who want to be Americans, but not people who don't.
It's interesting that a lot of blame and I was being put towards the mayor of San Francisco in this one particular case and the city. What about that? Can we blame a city administration for the acts of an illegal immigrant or illegal alien that committed murder allegedly?
No, but you can blame him for making it a sanctuary city, which is basically an open invitation to the criminals. Come on here. You're going to get good treatment, better treatment here. And so I think that it's a mistake. What it means is sanctuary for illegals. And we don't want illegals. We want people whom we admit legally, and we do admit a large number legally every year. And why should these criminals be allowed to go to the head of the line?
If you would like to learn more about my guest, you can go to eagleforum.org or click on the link on the show notes. You know, you mentioned Donald Trump at the beginning of the interview, thanking him. A lot were criticizing him regarding his comments on the Mexican situation and the border. What about that? Has Donald Trump actually done something to bring this to the forefront? Because it's not a new issue for sure.
No, it's not a new issue. But I guess it was many months ago that Ann Coulter came out with her latest book called Adios America. And she had just dozens of these cases of the alien criminals who had committed horrendous crimes against Americans. And she had a hard time getting anybody to review the book. The other news plans and bet networks did not really cover it or notice it. And finally, it was pretty funny. She had an interview with the top newsman in Mexico, and she said, well, finally I found a job that Mexicans will do that Americans won't do.
Yeah,
she does have a sense of humor, but she just had many cases. And the thing that struck me in reading the book was the many crimes against very young girls. I mean, teenagers and even girls younger than teenagers. Now, I guess maybe I can halfway understand a man who wants to go after some woman who's attractive and maybe his own age. But to go after these little girls who are 10, 11, 12 years old, it must be some kind of a monster. That's just so horrendous. It has to be dealt with.
Phyllis Schlafly is here. We're talking about diversity, sanctuary cities. Now, you being the author of 20-some books on varied subjects, and you mentioned it as far as getting the media today very tilted to the left to cover such book and to promote it. What do you think of the Ann Coulters and others, the true conservatives out there that are trying to get the message across but have very limited media contacts that will actually let them come on and tell what they're trying to tell their story about?
Well, it's a struggle to get your message across when the liberal is so liberal-dominated and feminist-dominated. It is difficult, but we have to try, and a lot of us have made a good success at selling books regardless. Of course, my original book that made the Republican Party, made the conservative movement, A Choice Not an Echo, I sold 3 million copies out of my garage. And and I have a new edition of that out now, which brings it up to date, because the kingmakers haven't given up on their shenanigans to control the nominee of the Republican Party.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about that, and the numbers of Republican candidates that are coming forward. I'm not sure how many it's up to now and where it will finally end up. Are the Republicans making a mistake by having so many candidates?
Well, it isn't so many. It's the fact that the establishment wants to control whoever gets in. And the establishment likes ones who are globalists and so forth. And all you need to do is look at the European Union and say, we don't want to be like that. We don't want to be in union with other countries and let other countries be making our rules and our laws. And I think that's the point. And the thing that's so interesting about Trump is that he doesn't care what they think, and he's not trying to toady to them. And he hasn't accepted their millions of dollars so he can be his own man. And he's the other thing is he's a fighter. As somebody said on one of the shows today, the Republicans elected this Republican Senate and House, and the House didn't do anything, and the House just passed Clinton's Obama's trade bill, and nobody's standing up and fighting. So what did we get by electing the Republicans?
you have testified before Congress and as an attorney and someone who has been well-versed on topics of government for many, many years. Have you ever seen it in such a mess like it is right now?
No, it isn't. And I spent probably 10 years of my life debating and talking about the strategic balance against the Soviet missile threat. And that was the big threat that we were worried about. And we needed to have a defense that's not just a strong national defense, but we need a military that is superior to every other country. And then our friends can rely on us and our enemies will respect us. And Obama apparently doesn't believe in that. He wants us to be like everybody else, and that's a great mistake.
It's been a huge mistake, and, you know, from as you know, I'm in Canada, and even though the show goes worldwide, the Canadians look to the United States a little differently now than what we used to. Used to be our favorite trading partner, and even the conservative Canadian government, I think, raises an eyebrow quite often when it comes to some policies that come from the United States, and immigration and diversity is one of them. And that's why I brought you on tonight, Phyllis, is to talk about that diversity. What about diversity in the current Obama administration?
Well, he's a big promoter of what is called diversity. And, for example, we've hired all these teachers in the schools to teach in different languages. I think that's a great mistake. I have a lot of friends who came over in the great immigration wave of the 20s, and they were teenagers or young kids, and they said when they got to Ellis Island, their parents would stand them up and say, now we're in America, and we're going to be Americans, and we're going to speak English, and we're going to love our new country. And nobody has that attitude anymore. They want to bring their own old-style methods here. And most of the people came to this country because they didn't like the old-style methods, and they wanted the freedom and opportunity they would get in the United States. And we need to teach them that, the importance of the way our Constitution was set up. And we believe in government by we the people, not by a select group of people I call the kingmakers.
You know, the term political correctness is one that we hear quite often. And some people understand it, some people just tend to ignore it. But what about that when it comes down to, well, just about anything? How the media reports incidences like in Baltimore, how some schools are being ran, you know, the sanctuary city, you name it. This big term of political correctness that comes up is one that a lot of people don't understand. How would you explain that?
Well, it's a method of control, and the use of the language is a very strong method of control. When I think of what strides the homosexuals have made in the last couple of years to get approval of gay marriage, I think they did it with the exploitation of two words. One was inevitability, and the other was discrimination. And they told us this was inevitable, and if you oppose it, you are guilty of discrimination, and most of our people didn't want to be accused of that. And so they found the use of the language to be an asset in their battle. And I think political correctness is another aspect of that. They want to make us talk and think the way they do, and that's not easy, but anyway, that's what they're trying to do.
How do we change that? How do we fix it? How do we point the everyday society in a different direction, or is that a personal choice?
Well, I think there's a lot we can do, especially if the conservatives really speak out more. And that's what I've been trying to do in Building Eagle Forum. I'm trying to get citizens who are sufficiently interested in politics that they'll endure the nitty-gritty of politics in order to get the right laws passed and the right candidates elected. And it's very important because we do have the opportunity to fashion the kind of country we want to live in, and we shouldn't let anybody take that away from us.
Let's talk a little bit more about the Eagle Forum. It's the link is in the show notes for the listeners listening live or listening to the show later on podcast. But tell us about the forum, why you founded it, and what people can find there.
Well, it's an organization of volunteers in politics, and we have a state chairman in every state, and a group of people, mostly who are volunteers and who are willing to devote some of their time to keeping this a great country. And I think we've been very successful because we've taken on some battles that others thought were impossible. For example, when we took on the battle to defeat the Equal Rights Amendment, nobody thought we could possibly win, and everybody was apparently for it. It was only the well-known national organizations were for it, and the Congress and the Senate were for it. They had great momentum in the states that had already ratified it. You have to have 38 states to change the Constitution. And even Hollywood was chiming in to send some of their stars to these state legislative hearings. And it developed into a 10-year battle that we haven't got time to relay here tonight, but it was a 10-year battle, and ultimately we beat them all. The presidents, the Congress, the famous people, the organizations and the money, and we beat them all and defeated the Equal Rights Amendment. And it's a great example of the grassroots rising up and being able to defeat all the powers that be.
You know, the saying, we the people, means quite a bit to some of us. Well, no matter where you live and you vote for representatives, whether it's on the local level or national level, to represent your thoughts, your ideas, your beliefs, they're your representative. That's gone down the drain, especially with this current administration in the United States. How about getting the faith of the people back, Phyllis? Because a lot of them just are shrugging their shoulders and saying, you know, I don't know, what's next? And you can fight the hard fight, but without the people coming out to put their X in the right place, it may be for naught.
Yes, and a lot of people do get discouraged by some of the things that you said. But we live in a country that where you can get things accomplished, and which is a two-party system. For example, some people try to think they'll join a third party because there's something the matter with the other two. Well, I say, if you want a third party, go to Europe. They've got a lot of third parties over there. You can pick one of them. And they're all useless. Our country is a two-party system.
It is, yes.
And so I think the biggest fight is in the Republican Party, and I urge people to come and join us and get my newsletter and get the right scoop on a lot of these bills they're doing. For example, this week and next week, the big issue in Congress is going to be they're going to prolong the education bills, which basically are tending to put more and more power in the hands of the federal government as to what our kids learn and don't learn. And I don't think that's the way the American people want it. So I urge you to contact your representatives and tell them you don't want Common Core and you don't want any substitute for Common Core. You don't want federal control.
And that's just it, is that there is so much federal control. Being able to turn that around, again, means that the people need to get a hold of their representatives. And one way that the message can get put out there is through talk radio. Now, you do your own version of talk radio, and we have the Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Hannitys, etc., that are out there. But what about the influence of talk radio and the people? I know they have the listenership, but is it really making that much of a difference?
Yes, I think it is. Of course, I didn't have that when I was fighting the Equal Rights Amendment. It was kind of pre-Rush Limbaugh and pre-talk radio. But we've got it now, and it's a tremendous help because you bring issues to the forefront of the American people whom the national media are not covering. And so you can learn a lot, you can call in, and you can get your information from various sources, and I urge people to do that. I'm a big fan of talk radio. So I would hope that people would make the decision to be active in politics, you can't just say politics is a dirty business, you're not going to be involved. That's where the action is. That's where decisions will be made as to whether we're going to continue to be a free country or not. And I urge people listening to this program. Now, if you want to be a player in the next presidential election, which is next year, you need my revised book of A Choice, Not an Echo. It's got the same name, A Choice, Not an Echo, and it tells you all the shenanigans that the kingmakers use to try to squeeze out the grassroots and get their man appointed. And at any rate, it's available now. You can get it off of my website, eaglefarm.org, or all the usual places like Amazon. And I urge you to get it. It's a very interesting book, and it tells you how the Republican Party nominates its candidates and what's been going on behind the scenes in these nominating conventions.
Just a few more minutes with Phyllis, and I want to ask a couple more questions about border security. We're hearing in the media now that the Mexican government has actually been doing more to tighten up their border on their southern end than the American government has been doing on their end. Is there ever a way, Phyllis, that we'll be able to have a safe and secure border?
Well, the Chinese built the Great Wall some centuries ago.
Exactly.
If they can build a wall, we can build a wall too. And I'm sure they didn't have many people climbing over that Chinese wall. I think there's been no will to really close the border, and that's what we need to have, because we have too many people standing in line to come in legally, and there's no reason why these criminals should get sent to the top of the line.
Yep. Well, I couldn't agree. Couldn't agree more. That's true. In fact, I've had some family members of my own that have gone through that difficulty, and it's interesting to see, the rights and benefits and all of that. But one of the big things that will be brought up, Phyllis, when it comes to the next election, will be how long Obamacare will last. Will it? Won't it? And what kind of damage has it done to the country? A couple of minutes on your thoughts on Obamacare.
Well, of course, it's another example of how Obama lied to us. And his man went on television. I saw him. I can't remember his name, but you'll remember his name. And he described how they put in this plan that you would get subsidies from the government if you joined up in what was called a state exchange. Well, 35 states said no thanks. And so then the Obama administration decided they were going to give people all over the country the subsidies anyway, which was a clear violation of the law they wrote. That's what Nancy Pelosi said. Yeah, you got to pass it to find what's in it. So then after we passed it, we did find out what's in it, and they didn't even obey their own law. I don't know how long we'll have Obamacare, but the idea of the government running our health system, there's something wrong with that. And we want to make sure that Americans can control their own health.
Just before I let you go, and I really appreciate you coming on, I'm not going to ask you your favorite candidate, but what would your ideal candidate be for the next election for President of the United States?
Well, we want somebody who's a fighter, who wants to make America great again, who believes in limited government, who believes in not just a strong national defense, but military superiority, so we're better than anybody else. And that's what we want our government to rebuild and make and treat people fairly. We hope we'll get somebody who's a fighter and will fight for the right things for America.
Phyllis, thank you. I really appreciate your time. And
and my website is eaglefarm.org.
Hopefully we can have you on again sometime.
Have a good evening.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Phyllis Schlafly from the eaglefarm.org. And what many of you don't know, well, I'll share a little bit more about Phyllis, is her education. She has a master's degree in government from Harvard University. And she did that in 1945. So she's been around for a long time. I think she's 93 or 94 years of age, and she has the diction and the articulation of someone in their 40s. She's a very smart lady. Whether you believe in her politics or not, pick up her book. Go to that page, eagleforum.org, to learn more about her. Now we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a minute or two to talk about a missing person, Emma Filipov in Canada, and we're going to talk to her mom, Shelley, and find out what's been going on in that case. You are listening to Scared Monkeys Radio at scaredmonkeysradio.com and scaredmonkeys.com, and you're also watching on Access Channel 7 and 70. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back with more. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Doing work with the missing is so important to me. It's just something that's, if we can get the word out, try and get some information, some leads, some whatever in the case of a missing person. It's, you know, even a one person hears the broadcast and we can say that it's made that difference. It's just, you know, is so paramountly important. Emma Filipov was last seen November 28th, 2012 in Victoria, BC, Canada. The 26-year-old's hair at the time was medium to light brown, approximately 5'5" in height. Eyes were brown, 100 pounds weight approximately, Caucasian. There are some circumstances that I want to share with you from the poster. Emma may be in a state of emotional duress. She's highly intelligent but also vulnerable. Emma is easily distinguishable by her long hair past her waist and typically wears dresses and knitted hats. If you have any information on her disappearance, contact the Victoria Police at 250-995-7654 or call 911. Click on the link in the show notes for more information. And what we've done tonight is brought on Emma's mom, Shelley, to talk more about her daughter. Hi, Shelley.
Hi, Dana. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's always a difficult time to bring on someone who's got a missing family member. I've been doing this for years now. Sometimes we get good leads, sometimes we don't. But I want to start out first with you telling me a little bit about your daughter.
Well, she is, and this isn't just the mother speaking, she's a wonderful person. She's kind, she's sensitive, she's generous, she's very talented. She's a gifted writer, a gifted chef, a gifted photographer. She has been struggling with some emotional issues, and apparently they got the better of her while she was in Victoria. And I am guessing that that is what led her disappearance, was her emotional state.
Okay. What was she doing in Victoria? Was she living there at the time?
Yeah, she had decided she had been living in, she went to North Island College to become a chef in Campbell River, and then she stayed on there for a couple of years and worked at a local restaurant, a local pub. And then she came home. She had a couple of minor health, physical health issues, and she wanted to have our own medical team, our family team, deal with it. So she came home for a period of time, and once that was dealt with, she decided she missed the West tremendously, and she wanted to go back, and this time she chose Victoria, and she, her clients had been to work as a chef, a restaurant, find work as a chef.
Now, for those that are listening, click on the link in the show notes for more information on the disappearance of Emma. Now, when you talk about emotional distress, maybe explain that a little bit. Was there a relationship problem? Was there a schooling problem? What was bothering her?
We don't know.
You don't know?
We don't know. We weren't aware of anything bothering her. It was only on, if I can back up, 27, around the 24th, I would say Friday, this, I believe it was the 24th, I received a call from Emma, and she was highly distressed, wanted me to come out to Victoria and help her come home. So I said, of course, I'll book a ticket immediately. I can be there within about 12 hours. I mean, I'm on the other side of the country. But, and then the next morning I received a call. I'm a very resilient. She's very independent to the point of being stubborn. And she tends to be secretive. She likes to have a private life that doesn't share with anybody. So anyways, the calls went back and forth, come, please come, don't come. And that went back and forth for a few, 3 days, I think. And then I made the decision to ignore her last plea, which was, please don't come, not today, Mom. And I flew out to Victoria to discover that she was, in fact, missing. It was the shelter staff of the women's shelter, the Sandy Merriman Women's Shelter in Victoria, that made a split-second decision to call the police once I arrived at the shelter. I knew she was in the shelter, so I knew something was significantly wrong. I could tell by the distress and the things that she was saying on the phone that she was in a bad place. So once I arrived at the shelter, they were really concerned about the fact that she hadn't checked in for her bed that night. So they called the police, and the police put out a missing persons bulletin that night, within maybe an hour of my arrival.
Where has the investigation gone?
Not very far, I'm afraid. There have been a few possible sightings, nothing confirmed. I have had a few sightings where people have managed to get a snap a photograph, and it has definitely not been Emma. Usually the description that I get is a vague resemblance to Emma, but nothing close, nothing really close. So we're much at a standstill. Almost 2 years, 8 months later, yeah.
Now you've been working with the media, social media, had some fundraisers, you're on the program tonight, and others. If you had a message for Emma or anyone that had information about Emma, what would that message be?
Well, the message for Emma would be, you are so well loved, and we miss you, and our lives can't be the same without you. We're worried about you. All we want to do is help you. Help you do whatever it is that you need or wish to do. Anybody having information, I would plead with them, I would beg with them to let us know where she is. We only want what's best for Emma. We're only trying to find her in order to help her. There are no family issues in our background. It's just a matter of the fact that this is very out of character. I mean, Emma not to be in touch with us for more than, you know, she usually would email a couple times a month.
Sure.
And so this is beyond bizarre, beyond bizarre.
Shelley Filipoff's yes. Here talking about her missing daughter, Emma. I'm sorry to interrupt you. We've got a few more minutes that we'll continue talking. What about relationships at the time? Was she in a relationship that you knew of?
I have no idea. No, nothing that I was aware of. And I couldn't find anyone to say that she was. It would appear that she was single at the time of her disappearance.
Now, there's all sorts of data banks and DNA banks and all of these things. Have the local authorities assisted you with that?
The Victoria Police say that it's an open case, that it's not a closed case, that it's not a cold case.
Okay.
But as far as an active search on their part, I would have to say that I somehow doubt it. I wasn't particularly pleased with the response that I got from the Victoria Police, even though they acted quickly in putting out a bulletin that she was, in fact, persons. It was days before they actually acted on that information. They kept assuming that she had just gone off on her own, or you know, was maybe out partying, which is totally not Emma. Emma's not a party girl at all, at all. So right from the beginning, there was that delay, and I think everyone knows that in the case of missing people, the first 72 hours are crucial.
Oh, absolutely, they are. We're talking about the disappearance of Emma Filipoff. Click on the link in the show notes for more information. The United States border is so close. to British Columbia. What about the states? Have you put some feelers out there and some information?
I have, and it wasn't until we got a tip from someone in Oregon that thought that perhaps they had seen her that the Victoria Police were willing to contact anyone in the U.S. I had urged them over and over again. I thought that that was a really valid possibility, and they chose to disagree with me. So the U.S. was not brought into it until much, much later after Emma had been missing. I mean, it would have been a very simple thing for her to get on a ferry and get into the United States.
Oh, absolutely. And it's so close.
It's so close, and you need much less identification than you used to. You know, anything with a photo ID will get you into the States.
Absolutely.
But I struggled with the police on that one, and it was, as I said, it wasn't until we received the tip from Oregon that they agreed to send out bulletins to Oregon, California, and Washington.
It is so difficult when I speak with families, because now it's been, you know, 3 years almost.
We're getting closer to the 3 year mark.
And the birthdays and the holidays and all of that that's come and gone, but the special bond between a daughter and a mother is something that, you know, we may read about or see in the movies, or, you know, you have the mother that wakes up in the middle of the night thinking that something's wrong. Did you ever have that feeling, and have you had it since she's disappeared? That
I have nightmares all the time. I have some pretty horrific ideas. I try not to dwell on them, because if I don't continue to hope and think more in terms of the positives, then I've really got nothing. But yes, I do. I am very concerned about her welfare. I am concerned that perhaps she is being held in some way against the will. I worry that she may have turned to self-medication due to her illness, because perhaps she hasn't sought help. She didn't, obviously, prior to her disappearance, there was no indication that she had sought help of any kind. She had certainly kept all her problems hidden from us. And, you know, it wasn't until she called me a few days before her disappearance that I was made aware that she was living in a woman's shelter. She had led us to believe that she was living in an apartment. And because no one writes letters anymore, there was no need for an address.
Right.
And she was adamant, and always had been, she was adamant about cell phones and social media. She wasn't on that before, so it wasn't, we didn't find it odd, it didn't strike us as odd that she didn't have a cell phone, that she would use a friend's phone or call from a payphone, because she had never wanted a cell phone.
You know, there are
things didn't stand out as odd at the time.
I know there are some advocates that are helping with you, and you have saturated social media, Facebook, etc. How about a private investigator to try and track down, and I know there are no leads, but to, or no current leads, but to even track down the identity, because, you know, there's so much that we hear about human trafficking and other things that are out there that, you know, that needle can be found in that haystack.
Well, that is what I'm clinging to, and I have hired a private investigator. I hired him a few months ago. I had two fundraisers here locally to help raise money to offset the cost of the private investigator. So he's been working for a few months very diligently, I must say. He hasn't turned anything up, but he is going back to ground zero, so he's re-interviewing. We agreed that he should not talk to the police or get notes from me until he had done his own investigation. So a fresh set of eyes, a fresh mind, asking questions in a different way. So he has been re-interviewing everybody that I interviewed, everybody that the police interviewed. So that's been quite an onerous task. But he has come up with nothing so far.
Well, don't give up. Parents never give up.
I will never give up.
I had them tell me many times that they would move mountains and they would give their own lives to find their lives of their children. I'm going to give you the last minute here, Shelley, to give the listeners again information on how they can pass on tips about Emma's whereabouts.
Well, they can contact the Victoria Police. They can call 911. If they don't feel, some people just don't feel an urgency. then I urge them to, if they think they see someone that resembles Emma, if they can, take a picture and email it to me at philipoff@hotmail.com. A lot of people are doing that, forwarding me photographs to me so that I can tell immediately whether it's her or not. There isn't always a guarantee that 911 will respond, especially if a person has left. You know, if someone calls 911 and they say, I think I saw a missing person, Emma Philipoff, and they ask where that person is, and they say, well, she's gone off, then I believe the 911 does that as an emergency.
Well, we'll do what we can here, and listeners can also forward anything that they may know to me, and I can get it off to Shelley for sure. Shelley, good luck. Godspeed. And if you need anything, always contact me.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's always heartbreaking to hear the voice of a parent who has a missing loved one. And again, Emma Philipoff was last seen in Victoria, B.C., Canada, November 28th, 2012. At the time of her disappearance, she was 26 years of age, medium to light brown hair, 5'5", brown eyes, approximately 100 pounds in weight, Caucasian. Any information on her disappearance, call 911 or the Victoria Police at 250-995-7654, or click on the link in the show notes to find out more about her disappearance. Okay, that's it. That's tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you again soon here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio, and of course access Channel 7 and Channel 70. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.